hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I am Michael Hogue, your host, and we're live, by the way. Glad to be your host here for this excursion into what's going on and how much you'll enjoy it. The choices that you have. It's all about choices in life, isn't it? And that's what we do here on the Arts Magazine. So part of the arts lineup here on KKFI, we have Arts Magazine on Monday. We have Arts Speak Radio on Wednesdays with Maria. Sometimes Charles Ferrugia will do something with the arts on Friday, although he does other stuff as well. Checks out a lot of garage sales also on Friday. But all part of the arts lineup here on KKFI. And in a few weeks when the radio festival comes to town, and three or four, maybe even five different shows are going to have interviews about that. So you'll be up to date on what's going on as you listen to the programs here on KKFI. We're going to talk about the Barn Players in the first segment of the show today. They are doing the drama The Graduate. Yes. Remember that Benjamin, Mrs. Robinson, on the stage of the Barn Theater. It'll open on Friday, the 27th of May, and continue for basically three weekends, concluding on June the 12th on a Sunday afternoon. Nino. They're good friends.
Not quite.
They're good friends. Bill Pelletier.
Yes, sir.
Is with us. He is the director of The Graduate. He has directed at the Barn before in Barefoot in the Park, Noises Off, has played such diverse roles as Richard Nixon,
yes.
Eklis, Kentucky Cycle, Rocky Horror, A Foreigner, The Birds, TV commercials, and I also would call him The Voice, because he does have a great voice. He now has radio spots. In fact, he was Thriftway's Thanksgiving Turkey Hunter.
Yes, and that was a television experience.
I'll bet.
That is long now forgotten, but it did happen on a day only slightly less rainy than today.
Think you'll be doing it again next Thanksgiving?
I would. I would do it if they would ask me. So I guess this is a good form to say I'm available.
That's right. Laura Jacobs is with us as well. She plays the role of Mrs. Robinson. I'm not sure you're old enough to be Mrs. Robinson, but I'm sure you make a good one. She has performed at the Barn in Cabaret, Jesus Christ Superstar. She's a graduate of the MFA program at UMKC, a very prestigious program, I might add. Has performed at the Kansas City Repertory Theater, the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, was great in the play The Taste Test for Melting Pot Productions, the Great River Shakespeare Festival, and many others I've seen you in that don't appear on your credits. Welcome.
Thank you.
Mrs. Robinson, it's a memorable role, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Is this a role you wanted to go after?
It's one that's always been on my radar, and I was kind of surprised with how quickly it came up, but she's not as old as people think.
That's true. In the script, it's revealed that she found out that she was pregnant at age 17, and her daughter Elaine is now 20 when the play takes place, so she is late 30s.
Okay.
In this piece.
Yeah, and Bancroft tended, in the movie, played her a little older, acting-wise,
yes,
at least.
She was only 36 when she played the role, though.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
She was only 6 years older than Dustin Hoffman, who was 30 when he played Benjamin.
Yeah. Now, Bill, I'm going to ask you to directing this play. It can be bold at times.
It can be. We have a strong R rating.
Uh-huh.
And, but we have tackled the challenge as well. I think I'm very proud of the group we have. And we would love everyone to come out and experience it with us.
Yeah, the attraction for the show was the older woman, much younger man aspect of it. How does Laura handle that?
It's interesting because the actor playing Benjamin is an actor who I've known since he was young.
Oh, really?
So I met him when he was still growing up and I was already an adult. So in a way, personally, we already have some of that relationship where now we've continued as colleagues and friends into adulthood because he's now an adult, although I still think of him as a baby sometimes.
Well, probably not now.
Well, yes. It's a big, complicated thing, but it's a great role to work on and a very complex relationship between the two of them and where they are in their personal lives and what they get out of each other but what they can't offer each other. And
Now, the movie isn't on too often. Not anymore.
Really.
I haven't seen it in quite a while. But it's an interesting story, isn't it? Which one of you would like to tackle the basic storyline for us?
Okay. Laura's pointing at me. The movie of The Graduate actually is the second adaptation of the story. It began as a book in the early 60s, and in 1967, Mike Nichols directed, of course, Dustin Hoffman and Anne Bancroft in the well-known movie. This play was adapted by Terry Johnson in 2000, so it's another adaptation of the story. It's based on the screenplay. You'll see a lot of familiar scenes if you're familiar with the movie, but there are a couple of scenes that were added. We follow the story of Benjamin Braddock, just freshly out of college and just lost, not knowing what his future is going to hold, what he's going to do with his life, where at his graduation party, he meets one of his parents' friends, Mrs. Robinson. They have a brief, torrid affair, and Ben's parents would like him to date Elaine Robinson, who just happens to be Mrs. Robinson's daughter. Mrs. Robinson is obviously opposed to this. And the triangles and story goes running from there. We set the basic plot line, and we take off flying.
If I'm remembering correctly, they were business partners, the two men?
Yes, mm-hmm. The two parents were business partners.
So Benjamin has probably known her his whole life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She comments on that multiple times, that he's known her practically all his life.
Yeah.
But I think there has been a gap from him going away to college and... I'm not sure how close that relationship has necessarily been over the years, other than meeting here and there. But I think there's been a gap where once he comes back, he's done some growing up that she sees, whereas he really was a little boy before.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you see things go on. He seemed to be... just graduated from college, and he seems to be lost. What am I going to do next? Maybe it was the way Dustin Hoffman played it, because actors play things different ways. But as the director, is this the way you direct your young man?
Oh, yes. He's very uncertain what he's going to do. And a lot of parental rebellion, especially around this time of the late 1960s, is in there as well. We see the parents who are so controlling over what Ben is going to do with his life and the way he's going to go, and his rebellion just leads to all the relationships with Elaine and Mrs. Robinson. And
yeah, he seemed to be, at least the way it was portrayed in the film, and mm-hmm. it could be different in this instance, but right. He seems to be reluctant to catch on to what, for someone that would be experienced, you would think, having gone to 4 years of college, he did seem to be a little dense. At least that's the way Hoffman played in the film.
Mm-hmm, that's true. Ben is very intelligent. I mean, he excelled in sports and several academia at school. It's just the thing of life outside of school, I think, is where, okay, there's no more classes to excel at. What am I going to do now? I have no idea.
Well, there's always work.
There's that.
There's more classes.
Which I think is part of his choice. He's trying to decide, does he continue on to graduate school? Does he get a job teaching with this grant that he received? Does he just bum around in his parents' pool? That he's not sure what decision to make because he hasn't really experienced life. He's a little naive and unworldly in his way, even though he's a very educated, intelligent man.
And, it's a period piece, I asked you earlier,
yes.
So you get the flavor of the 60s in there, the famous line where, is it Mr. Robinson that takes him aside and says, plastics. Today it would be social media. But plastics was big back then.
Oh, yes. I'm, in fact, surprised. I thought the big line from the show, and this is me, although I was alive in 1967, shouldn't admit it. But
oh, so was
anyway,
I
always thought the big line from the show was, you're trying to seduce me, Mrs. Robinson. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised by the number of people who are coming up to me and say, oh, you're doing The Graduate, plastics. That is the big line. Everyone knows, apparently.
That's right. That's one of them that stands out, because you couldn't help but chuckle when it was in the theater.
That's true.
Yeah, it was considered racy in its day. And I don't know why, because the 60s were wide open. You know, Hair was already playing on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they considered it racy. It's more the concept, I think, than what they actually did. They did very little in the way of exposure, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the only time we saw her was in A Reflection.
Yes, yes, very quick cuts.
Yeah, very quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're speaking with Bill Pelletier, the director, and Laura Jacobs, who plays the role of Mrs. Robinson in the Vaughn Players production of The Graduate. Yes, the one most of you are all familiar with. It's kind of a coming-of-age story. When you go to the various websites and it talks about it, it calls it a coming-of-age story. Although, the density that he exhibited there towards the beginning is still baffling.
Very naive. And we're drawing a lot of the comedy on Ben's awkwardness, his first time with an older woman. And it's so hilarious just to see how innocent and naive he is. And Mrs. Robinson, who is so experienced, is very hilarious.
So experienced. and as they point out several times, he's known her most of his life. So I suppose, for that, it's kind of a mind blower for him more than anything else. You know, why would she want me? Why does she? Is it part of her alcoholism? It's kind of obvious. She is, at least in the movie, they played it that way. Maybe you're playing it different.
I think she's a woman who doesn't really have very many strong connections in her life, and her husband tolerates her. I don't think they are planning to get divorced, but they don't have a happy marriage at all. And between all of the false structures that she's built up around her she wants for nothing in a way, but she wants for everything. She has no happiness. She has no love in her life. And what I think initially is just an amusement for her then becomes something that she latches onto, and they form this codependent relationship where both of them are lost in their own lives. And they fill it up with this plug of each other for a frantic few months until it just kind of explodes in their faces. Mm. I think she really is needing the connection and the validation of a younger man. She had to grow up very fast.
She discovered that she was pregnant at a young age, so as you pointed out earlier, so she's really not as old as we thought of her being. Perhaps the movie played it that way, because the alcoholism would age anyone doing it over a time like that. So she's a sympathetic character in many, many ways, although the first time you see the film, you don't really think of that way. But she probably really is a sympathetic character in her own way. And, you probably have... There's so many different directions you could go with this. What did you decide you wanted to do?
Well, I've been surprised by how many people have mentioned, knowing that we're doing this production, that she's the villain of the piece. And I have never seen her that way. I don't think there is a villain. I think it's a bunch of complicated people who all have their own needs that they're trying to take care of. But I was very surprised when people see her as this villain rather than just as a flawed human being. I don't know how I'm playing her. I guess I feel like I'm playing her as a rather insecure,
it's true,
aging woman who is desperately needing something. And she puts that on Benjamin, and he becomes the scapegoat for everything else that's wrong in her life.
Do you play her as the take charge person? And I'm thinking of the scene in the hotel, which may not be in the play, I don't know. But they meet at the hotel, and he's rather reluctant to even get a room because he's afraid that everyone's going to know that the people of the hotel, they don't care.
Yes.
But when she realizes that things haven't progressed, she goes right to it and starts taking charge. Did you get us a room, Benjamin? No, Mrs. Robinson. And the fact that he still continues to call her Mrs. Robinson, I find kind of funny.
It's the only way he refers to her throughout the play is Mrs.
Robinson. And I never call him Ben. I only call him Benjamin. I only call my husband Howard. Most people call him Hal. I'm very formal with everything. I think I'm take charge in a very underplayed way, where I'm somewhat calm and indulgent with him, but he can tell that there's a very thin line where my patience will stop. I'm very patient right now.
Yeah.
But let's keep this moving.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess that's how it feels from
true.
The inside. But.
I always saw Ben as trying to escape from his parental control of his household and Mrs. Robinson trying to just escape from her unhappy marriage.
Yeah.
And they have found each other, and it's not necessarily a happy ending.
Yeah, and when it all hits the fan,
it's true.
Not to give anything away.
Right, so. Yeah. Right.
But the complication, if you don't mind my jumping ahead, he does make a connection with her daughter, mm-hmm. and that does not please her at all. Is that her insecurity?
It's very complicated. I think there is an element of truth to the fact that she sees him not as good enough for her daughter because he was willing to have this affair with her. Yeah. I think there's a double standard in the 60s of where that line lies, and she doesn't want a man like that being with her little girl. I think there is some jealousy and some ownership there where, no, you're mine.
Yeah.
I think she knows she's not going to hang on to him forever, but releasing him to just someone else was what was expected, having him become her son-in-law is a whole nother layer of...
Do you think she's done this before? I guess it's not really clear by the script.
I believe, at least what I'm playing from, is I believe she has had affairs before. I don't think she has ever had an affair with a younger man like this. I think it's always been neighborhood friends, people at cocktail parties, other businessmen, that kind of world that they live in, lawyers, that kind of... Mm-hmm. I don't think she's ever been with someone who was essentially young enough to be her child.
Yeah, and that would mean complications right there as well. Tell me about the young man who plays Benjamin.
Oh, the actor who's playing our Benjamin is Jake Leet. He has performed at the Barn Players several times in Hair, and I'm going to forget everything, Avenue Q, and let's just say many others that I can't think of right now. He's performed at the White Theater at the Jewish Community Center, most recently in Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum with Laura Jacobs out there. And a very talented young man. He's willing to tackle aspects of the character and very hardworking, and we're glad to have him.
Yeah. Was it a hard process finding just the right guy?
It was. We had several who showed up to audition who were very good. That's the problem. I never know if it's better to have a bunch of great people to choose from and have to narrow it down to one, or just have that one person and no one else. So, but we had a very difficult decision to make, and Jake has just been a delight to work with.
Yeah. What about the others? Mr. Robinson, for instance,
Yes, Mr. Benjamin Robinson is played by Doug Ford in our show, and Benjamin's parents, Scott Turner and Dee Dee Deemer, and we have a couple of the swing roles, we're calling them. They play multiple roles within the show, are Katie Bettis and Michael Wimpy. And who am I leaving out?
Monica,
of course. Monica Bowen is playing Elaine.
Ah.
I should have had a list with me, or else I knew I would have left someone out. But
sure.
Also a delight.
And I would not forget my daughter.
Of course not.
Do you hear that,
I'm
Elaine?
So sorry.
Now, just between the two of us. Everyone else, turn down the radio for a second. How much younger is she than you? Probably not very much.
How much younger is Monica than me?
Yeah.
She's 15 years younger than I am.
Okay. Well, I guess it's possible then.
Yeah, we're a few years shy of, but she's at least 15 years younger than me.
We're within that believable range, let's just put it that way.
I probably shouldn't pursue this, but I have to. That prior relationship you had with him, does that help in the role after a while? It was probably awkward at first.
I think it does. It wasn't too awkward at first because we have worked together as adults previous to this show. So we've established a relationship as colleagues rather than, you know, mentor to younger person quite as much. And the fact that we have worked together multiple times over the years, I think, actually helped with the comfortability and jumping right in, and that the awkwardness that's there is the awkwardness that's just written into the scene. Because the script is brilliant. The text just gives it to you right there where that's what's playing out right now. Mm-hmm. But we have fun with each other, and
Well, that's good. If you can't have fun with it, is that what you tell them? Just have fun with these scenes.
The great thing is I didn't have to tell them. Everyone just meshed really well together. I'm very pleased with how everyone's. We had almost a 12-hour technical rehearsal yesterday. Everyone was jovial, good mood, getting along. Brilliant. It's a dream.
It was a fun test.
It was fun.
I think it was fun for everyone.
I hope so.
Top to bottom. Yeah.
The show opens this Friday, May the 27th at 7:30. Performances continue on Saturday the 28th at 7:30. A matinee on Sunday the 29th at 2 o'clock p.m. Then we move into June for the last two weekends. Friday the 3rd at 7:30. Saturday the 4th at 7:30. Sunday the 5th at 2 o'clock. A special industry night performance on Monday the 6th at 7:30 p.m. Then performances then continue Friday the 10th, Saturday the 11th in the evening, and another Sunday afternoon matinee at The Barn Players. So just go online to thebarnplayers.org. The Barn, by the way, is located at 6219 Mart Way in Mission, Kansas. If you need to MapQuest things, you need the zip code, and that is 66202. There is a phone number to call. They don't man this phone number 24 hours a day. They're always very careful to tell me that. I still give the phone number anyway.
Well, sure. They do return messages.
If there are special considerations, like if someone in your party is handicapped, that would be a good opportunity to use this number, 913-432-9100. And that's the number to call. Performances continue this Friday, so it's getting close. If you want to have them brush up on any one thing, what would that be? Sounds like the relationships are good.
It is. If I want to have the actors or the audience brush up on what they're doing.
The actors, of course. Is there anything that needs to be more fleshed out, do you think? And I say fleshed in the best. In only the best way, of course.
Oh, my. No, we're doing tremendously well. The thing about this script adaptation is not only did it add a couple of new scenes that even if you're very familiar with the film, that will be new to you, that kind of really get in deeper with the characters.
Uh-huh.
I think we're discovering, and we're going to keep discovering up until we open, and that the different nuances, it is such good text to work with. We're always finding reasons for the way we are and the way we do what we do. We're still fleshing out. We're very close. We will be there, and we want you to come see us.
Performances, of course, begin this Friday, the 27th. The music was a big part of the movie, but this is
sure.
not a musical, you told
but
me.
No.
The Simon and Garfunkel music will be heard.
Yes.
You will hear the familiar soundtrack. It is not a musical, though.
Paul and Art will carry us scene to scene.
It's the original Simon and Garfunkel.
Yes. I'm glad to hear that, because that was a very important part of setting the scene.
And so identifiable with what people think of as The Graduate with the music.
Yeah. What? It kind of leaves you hanging, Laura. What do you think happened in the future?
Well, people need to come see the play. The play ends a little differently than the movie.
Okay.
And many of us have had this discussion about the script versus the screenplay, that we like the ending of the stage version, the theatrical version, much better because we were left unsatisfied by the end of the movie. Okay. There's still an unknown future at the end of the play. You still don't really concretely know what's going to happen with anyone. But there's a little more closure and satisfaction to certain elements that I think people will appreciate, that for those of us that in the film, really the ending feels a little abrupt to me at times. Yeah. And I'm satisfied with a few of the words that get to be said.
Did that surprise you when you saw the original script?
It did surprise me when I was first reading the stage script. Act 2, Scene 4 is just...
So people remember that. Act 2, Scene 4.
Right,
it's the wedding. So those who know what that is.
Yeah.
But it's not the wedding you've ever seen.
Okay. Sounds like a lot of fun. Graduate with Laura Jacobs. Oh, did Mike Wimpy ride his motorcycle to rehearsals?
I don't believe he does.
He doesn't.
Especially
anymore.
In weather like this. I don't want him to ride tonight.
My memory of him is riding that motorcycle to rehearsals.
Yes.
It sounds like a cast of colorful individuals.
Yes. We're having
a great
time.
Cast.
I bet so. Yeah. What is your biggest challenge, do you think?
I think the biggest challenge is navigating the entire depth of where she goes just over the course of the first act. That it's a pretty big arc, and there's a lot of twists and turns within scenes as well as between scenes. We have three scenes at the Taft Hotel that span 3 months back to back, that we just jump from the first time to 3 months down the road, and it's a very quick, you know, it's just a flip, and we're still in the bed, and that's been a fun challenge, because it's been a long time since I've had a role that asks that of me.
Uh-huh.
But it's been a challenge to really jump in and have that navigating of the river and the currents and the rafts. You know where those rocks are, but you're never sure where the rapids are going to go on any given day, so it's a new ride each time.
See, maybe I'm different. I remember seeing the film for the first time. I'm not sure I was old enough at the time to see the film, but I did. And I remember feeling sorry for her. And most people did not. They saw her as being an exploiter. But I felt sorry for her. Because, you know, I know a lot about alcoholism and how that affects people. Mm-hmm. I felt sorry for her.
This is why I like you, Michael. I feel sorry for her, too. I've always felt... I mean, I have to be somewhat removed from that as I'm playing her, not judging from the outside. But, yeah, I've always sympathized with her and felt sorry for her. And, yeah, sometimes her reactions were a little head-turning, but that she's a human just as much as anyone else, and she just needs to be loved.
Well said. Decide for yourself. The show opens this Friday the 27th, continues for 3 weekends, an industry night performance on Monday the 6th, but basically for 3 consecutive weekends at the Barn Players of Johnson County, thebarnplayers.org. Yes, you have to put the in there. 6219 Martway, Mission, Kansas, zip code 66202, and the number you can call for information probably won't return the message. Snap right away, but they do have a number. So it's 913-432-9100. Well, great having you here to talk about
Thank
this.
Thank you so much.
Sounds like
Thanks
you have a lot
us.
Of fun, though, Laura.
We do.
We have a great time.
Bill Pelletier, the director, he's directed at the Barn many times before. He's now doing radio spots, the thrift way turkey dinner.
I'll stick around here and cut a few for you if you'd like. That'd be fine.
And Laura Jacobs, who plays the role of Mrs. Robinson. You've seen her at UMKC. She's a graduate, if I didn't say it before, of the MFA program. Very prestigious at UMKC. Also appeared with a rep, the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, and was great in the taste test at Melting Pot Productions. As well, if we had more time, we'd go over the Great River Shakespeare Festival. We don't have time, so we have to get out of here. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
For being with us. We're going to take a brief break. Then when we return, Brad Zimmerman will be with us. He's voted all the way up, probably, from Olathe. He's going to tell us about the show they're doing down there, The Golden Age of Musicals. Yes, indeed. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. The buddy comedy gets a new treatment in an old way with The Nice Guys. The writer-producer-director team that brought you the Lethal Weapons movies reunite for a foul-mouthed action comedy set against the sleazy backdrop of 1977 Hollywood. Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling are terrific as a pair of mismatched private detectives who get in over their heads when working on a case of a murdered porn star. The movie is overlong and the mix of humor and violence doesn't always work, but Crowe and Gosling are money. They may not really be playing nice guys, but the pairing certainly is a nice one. If you've never heard of the mobile video game Angry Birds, you're probably still using a rotary dial phone. In the animated big screen adaptation, The Angry Birds Movie, Kansas City's Jason Sudeikis provides the voice of Red, a furious flightless bird who battles invasive pigs. The loopy humor and frenetic action are clearly aimed at the younger moviegoing demographic. It's a harmless, well-animated farce that may not be inspired, but it's no turkey. Pelé, Birth of a Legend, is a family sports drama that focuses on the early years of Brazilian soccer superstar Pelé. It shows how the poverty-stricken youngster worked his way out of the Brazilian favela to lead the Brazilian team to the World Cup championship at age 17. While it's an inspiring story, it's given a very pedestrian treatment. Also opening this week, Seth Rogen and Zac Efron return for more crude hijinks in Neighbors: Sorority Rising. Oscar winner Susan Sarandon plays a smothering mom who interferes with daughter Rose Byrne's life in the aptly named comedy The Meddler. Tilda Swinton plays an aging rock star whose vacation with her hunky boyfriend is invaded by her former lover Ralph Fiennes and his sexy daughter Dakota Johnson in the erotic thriller A Bigger Splash. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM.
Freeze Frame! Welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station. Right here in Kansas City, I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us. Is it still raining as hard as it was earlier, Brad, out there? Did you boat all the way up from Olathe? Yeah, it's difficult up there. Now, you can listen to us on 90.1 FM. You can listen to us on kkfi.org, literally around the world. You can listen on podcasts. I have about 2 years worth of podcasts on there myself. You can listen to that. Or if you happen to be standing at the corner of 39th and Main, we have a speaker out there. Yes, I'm talking about you, mister. You can stand down there, and you can listen to us there as well. So lots of ways to hear about the programming here on KKFI. Brad is here. He is Brad Zimmerman. He is with the Chestnut Fine Arts Center. He's the director. He's the owner. He's the artistic director. Do you have any other titles?
Oh, I have lots of titles. I'll be back there doing various duties here before long.
Oh, I see. Yeah, it must be busy. And for those of you that have heard this before, please indulge me. The theater is actually in Brad's house.
Yes, it is.
Does that provide any dilemmas once in a while?
Oh, you need to make sure you're appropriately dressed at all times.
You never know when workers are going to be down there doing things as well. Brad is doing the show The Golden Age of Musicals. It'll open on, what is the date today? Has it opened?
It opens this Thursday, May the 26th.
Aha. And it'll run through July 3rd. Now, you're known for having long runs.
Yes.
So this is another one.
It's a six-week run. We'll be doing either four, five, or six shows a week, depending on the week, and lots of offerings and great music.
Yeah, that's the greatest, one of the greatest eras in the history of Broadway theater. Included in the show, such presentations as 42nd Street, My Fair Lady, Brigadoon, Camelot, Fiddler on the Roof, Guys and Dolls, Music Man, probably a lot of others.
Well, we actually have six musicals that we're visiting. We have three Lerner and Lowe shows in the first act and three great classics, The Music Man, Fiddler on the Roof, and Guys and Dolls in the second act. And we do about 20 minutes of each show featuring the songs and a lot of the scenes from the shows as well.
So they're doing scenes from the show.
That's right.
As well as singing the songs.
Oh, yeah.
And this, of course, is right up the alley for your audience.
Oh, it's wonderful because many of these shows, are the old-fashioned musicals the last three and a half hours. You can come and get the cliff notes in 20 minutes and hear all the great songs, and we visit six throughout the evening.
Now, is this a show where you got to pick what songs, or did it come as a
No,
as
I put this
book?
Together myself.
You put it together. Mm-hmm. So how did you decide which song you wanted to pick?
That was difficult, especially my formula was to have a maximum of 7 to 8 songs per show, and I wanted to introduce the main characters, always the soprano and the baritone that meet each other, and then there's always the secondary characters, and so we had to get those introduced, and a few ensemble numbers and try to tell a story, and it was a difficult challenge to do that in 20 minutes.
Yeah, and in 20 minutes?
Yes.
That sounds like a big challenge as well. So picking the right people
is very
important.
That's right. We have a cast of, we have five in our regular cast, and then Kenny Remmert is playing drums. His wife, Lenore Remmert, is on keyboards, and I'm on piano. So Kenny's doing a little bit of double duty. He's doing some character work and some singing and playing the drums as well.
Well, he can do it.
Oh, yes. Very talented man.
He doesn't have any problems at all. Ken is Kid is very versatile.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. So is his wife. She's a great piano player.
Very talented duo.
Are you in the show?
I'm mainly playing and doing a little bit of singing as well.
Yeah. Well, are these difficult songs to sing? They're of a different era.
Well, they require trained voices because they are, and we have excellent singers and good actors as well. So I think the people will really enjoy it. We have John Doherty, who's a marvelous singer, doing all of the leading baritone roles. He'll be doing Sky Masterson and I'm trying to think, Tommy and Brigadoon, and fits him perfectly.
Yeah. So you took a couple of songs from many different musicals?
Yes. Well, 7 to 8 songs per show.
Mm-hmm. Is that difficult to decide what to drop, what to use?
It is, because there's a lot of shows. You know, there may be as many as 20 songs in a show, but I wanted to specifically introduce the characters, and the leading characters and the secondary characters.
So they get a taste of the not only the music, but the storyline of the show.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
For all those different musicals.
That's right. It's a full evening.
It sounds like it.
Yes.
It really does.
And we did a show like this a couple of years ago called Climb Every Mountain, and it was a review of the Rodgers and Hammerstein shows. Very successful, and the audiences really liked it. And, you know, you can't argue with success. So this year we're doing the golden age of musicals.
That's true. That's very, very true. I mean, some of the singers are younger, I guess.
Oh, yes.
Are they familiar with the songs? Or do you introduce them to this?
Most of these folks are musical theater folks, so they knew most of the shows. Some of them were a little less familiar. Camelot was a little less familiar to them, but they certainly knew Guys and Dolls and Fiddler, knew most all of them. So as I presented this vast amount of material, I said, now you probably know most of this, because it seemed rather daunting at the first rehearsal how much I had given them.
We always have the situation where people recognize the songs. They don't necessarily know where they came from.
Exactly.
I find more and more in modern times that's the case.
Oh, yeah.
They know the song. Mm-hmm. Really don't know where it came from.
Or they may know the movie. And in some cases, a song that I chose may have appeared in the Broadway version and not the movie. An example of that is in Guys and Dolls, we're doing Marry the Man Today, which the leading actress and, I'm trying to think of their names, Sarah and Adelaide sing together, and they're talking about all the problems they're having with their men.
Well, that happens in the show,
yes,
of course.
Yeah.
And was not unusual. But the relationships between men and women.
Yes, but they resolve quickly.
Well, in your version, I guess they have to.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. You had to pick just the right songs and scenes to get a full flavor.
That's right. And we kind of, each of the singers kind of has a track. We have our leading soprano, we have our character girl, our leading man, and our character man. And then Kenny fills in the spaces, and I do a little bit of that as well.
Yeah. Kenny's filling in the spaces?
Yes. Kenny's going to be playing Tevye for us.
Oh, really?
Yes. John was a little young for Tevye. Yeah.
Yeah. Does he play the fiddle?
No, we double that on Lenora takes care of that.
Ah, I see. Okay. Well, speaking with Brad Zimmerman, he's the director, owner, artistic director of the Chestnut Fine Arts Center in Olathe. They are doing the musical, The Golden Age of Musicals. It opens on May 26th, runs through July 3rd, 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
That's a long run. You're going to sell out every show in 6 weeks?
Well, that's certainly our goal. We have a lot of season ticket holders and people that come and visit us at every show, and we welcome them, and tickets are on sale right now, and all the way through the end of our run, which is July the 3rd.
I have the number here, 913-764-2121. The Chestnut Fine Arts Center in Olathe is located at 234 North Chestnut Street, Olathe, Kansas. And if you MapQuest, you need the zip code 66061, chestnutfinearts.com.
That's right.
That is where you go. Mm-hmm. Your audience. Now, your audience, you were doing perfect shows for your audience. So how did that all, when did you make the decision that this was the kind of thing that would best work for you? And how did that?
Well, not by design, but by the ways things have simply happened over the past 17 years. We do play to a more mature crowd. They are very faithful, loyal patrons that come to almost everything that we do. We have over 1,500 season ticket holders, and I find that they like songs that are familiar and songs from the past, so we do a lot of the shows from the 50s, the 60s. When we started out 17 years ago, we were doing a lot of the 40s shows. But now, as our demographic has changed a little bit, 50 shows are doing awfully well for us. And these are shows, you know, that songs from these were popular songs of the day. Even they lasted beyond the musical, and songs that Frank Sinatra picked up and sang, you know, in his nightclub acts, and songs that they heard on the radio.
Yeah, your audience seems to love exactly what you do.
Well, I hope so.
So you kind of picked a good niche, I think.
Well, our audiences, as I said, are very faithful, and I'm very appreciative of their support.
Yeah, and you've been a big success down there. You've been, how many years?
You said we're just finishing our 17th year and taking reservations for year 18.
That's right. You already announced your schedule for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Give us some of the highlights.
We will be opening in the fall. We run on the school year. We'll be opening with I Do, I Do, the great Robert Preston musical. Next, we'll be doing a tribute to the Andrews sisters, Patty, Maxine, and Laverne. That's our holiday show. For New Year's, we'll be bringing back one of our biggest hits that we've done many times, Always Patsy Cline. Starting in January, the gospel musical Smoke on the Mountain. And then we'll be doing our play. We do at least one play every year. In March, we open with Over the River and Through the Woods. A beautiful story there. We'll be doing a folk show in May, Blowin' in the Wind. And then, due to the success of our production 2 years ago of The Church Basement Ladies, we're offering the sequel, A Second Helping of The Church Basement Ladies.
Same cast?
It is the same cast. Oh. Different story, different music, but same cast and same characters.
Yeah. Do you find your audiences like to see certain people?
Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah. But we introduce new people almost every show. We have a new young lady in our show now, and I always tell the audience that we have a new friend, and they embrace them.
Yeah, you have a loyal audience.
We do.
You really do. And they appreciate what you do.
Well, you've
been doing it for a long time.
It has been a long time.
It doesn't seem like that.
No. Every day is a joy to wake up at the Chestnut.
Yeah. And it's in Brad's home, as I said earlier. Sounds like a, you know, kind of a homey situation.
Do
you think of your cast as family?
Oh, yeah. And part of our tradition, we had our tech rehearsal yesterday, as we all sit down and have a meal together. And that's part of our long day. We were there yesterday from 1 till 11. And at 6 o'clock, we all sat down and ate together. And it makes for a very family. Each 6 weeks to 8 weeks, we bring in a new cast, and it feels like, you know, an extension of our family there at the Chestnut.
Well, sure, yeah. You have, what, six shows a year?
Six shows a year plus two of our specials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, well, you also do the Dickens Carol.
That's right.
Around Christmas time.
Yeah, year 33.
Well, so you've been doing that a lot longer than you've been doing your regular shows. When did that start?
Well, the organization of it starts every year in August, and then we will begin singing in beginning of November and go all the way through New Year's.
So people can book you for even now for the holidays?
We book up to a year in advance.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a long time.
Yes, it is.
It really is. So you have the Dickens Carolers. What other specials do you have?
Well, we do our New Year's show, as I mentioned. We'll be doing Always Patsy Cline. We do 7 to 8 shows over the New Year's from the 27th through the 31st of December every year. And then we also present at the theater 3 of our Dickens Carolers in concert. We have 3 performances of that, because most of our performances with the carolers take place at locations other than the Chestnut.
Yeah. It's a big thing. I've seen the Dickens Carolers at restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
Places around town. Mm-hmm. And
we do as many as 250 performances each holiday season.
So it's not the same singers.
No, it is not. We have we have as many as 50 employees a year that sing throughout the Kansas City area.
Yeah, people have asked me, said, you don't ask him enough about himself. I say, well, he has so much to talk about. But how did it all begin for Brad? Did you study music at a young age?
I did, actually. I was interested in music all the way in beginning in elementary school, and was in choir and forensics and theater in high school. Have a music degree from KU and a master's from Baker, and taught music for 10 years in the public schools and at KU. And then I was freelance music director for 5 years, was a music director at Martin City Melodrama and at the New Theater Restaurant. I worked at the Heartland, the Coterie, and then I bought the big house in Olathe.
Was that a hard decision to make? Do I take this risk?
Well, it was certainly a life-changing decision. I had to give up my teaching career, which was my steady income, and decide that I was going to try to do something else, and it's all worked out.
You still teach piano.
I did for 24 years. I do not teach privately anymore. Regularly.
Just don't have the time?
Well, the goal was always to get the theater to the place where that was my full-time work, and that's certainly where we are, full-time plus.
Sometimes people will give different answers than you would expect. What is Fred's favorite kind of music?
My favorite kind of music? Well, I really love show music. I love classical music. I love opera. Yeah. But I really love the Broadway musical.
Yeah. Well, that would have been my guess. That sometimes people give an unusual answer. Yeah. They'll say rap. And in their career, they don't really do that. But.
Yeah. We just closed our last show was called Shine on Harvest Moon, and we did the songs of the turn of the century, a lot of the old ragtime numbers and vaudevillian numbers, and that was really fun to do as well.
Now, what kind of feedback did you get from your audience on that?
You know, it was a little bit tougher sell because they weren't quite sure what they were in for, and the music went back so many years, but as the people came and listened to it, they really enjoyed it. We had two big sing-alongs, one in each act, and they really seemed to enjoy that. Yeah. And we had a turn-of-the-century set that our set designer, my sister, came up with. It was beautiful. They were in turn-of-the-century costumes in the first act. In the second act, they were in flapper dresses and old pinstripe suits. And so it was really a fun show.
Well, speaking of flapper dresses, I would think the different kinds of shows that you're doing here, do you get them in the proper era of costume?
Well, what we do with this show, because there's so much change of characters, is we have a unit costume, and then we just add pieces on a show like this. We might add a hat or a shawl or props that indicate, but it would be quite an undertaking to costume each of these.
Really?
I
would think so.
It'd be like doing Forbidden Broadway again, with lightning-fast changes backstage.
You've done that in your...
We did it last summer. It was a big success for us.
Did you do things like that along the way in your career? Forbidden Broadway played at different places around.
Oh, yeah, and it's been playing for years. And it's a spoof of all of the Broadway shows.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Is that... something you enjoy doing?
I do. It was fun. Yeah. And it's very clever. The thing is that you have to understand what you're spoofing in order for it to be humorous. So we made certain that the pieces that we chose, because there's all kinds of pieces with recent Broadway musicals, we chose more of the spoofs of the old shows so that the audience was in on the joke.
Yeah. Did the age of the audience person help?
Or it did, and we played just some younger people on that, and especially people that really like musical theater. It played well.
When they're, you have a more mature audience, as you said, but when there are younger people in the audience, do they get it?
I think they do. And then, I always joke when we get somebody under 50, I say, well, the kids are here tonight.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point. The audience you have anyway, seems to appreciate what you do so much. And it's hard for a company to find a niche. We all know of companies around town who have such a hard time finding a niche. They want to do everything. And I'm not saying that's bad.
Right.
But if you find the right niche, you got to go with it.
That's right. And we stick with our niche. This is what's successful. They have come to appreciate and also have expectations of what kind of entertainment they're going to have when they come to the Chestnut. And I like to stay right within that.
Oh, sure. And you have, really. And you've been a big success doing that. And do you contemplate any changes on down the line? You're going to stick with that niche.
I think we're going to stay right there. We don't mess with success.
Yeah, as your audience ages, and this is a problem for theater sometimes, you said you did the 40s. Are you going to move that up and go back to the 50s maybe?
I think we will move forward. I cannot see myself doing Duran Duran or any of those things that became popular in the 80s, but, certainly 50s, 60s. There's beautiful music from the 70s. We are going to do a folk show next year, and that will bring in a lot of those folk tunes from the 60s. And we've done a couple of those shows in the past, and they've gone over well.
Yeah. Do you consciously have a mix in your head? I want to do I want to do a show with this particular mix, and I want to do a show with that particular mix.
I do, and as I formulate my season, which is the most important decision I make for the entire year, I want a variety, because, of course, everybody has different musical tastes, but they're still within that same genre. I like to do plays. We do one or two plays occasionally. But just a mix of stories or shows that are just a review, that are not story-based, and then book musicals as well. We do small book musicals.
I'm going to assume that while the book musicals are great, you probably would like to pick the songs yourself.
Well, you certainly have more flexibility that way. Mm-hmm. When you do a show like I Do, there is no flexibility. You're presenting somebody else's work, and you understand that going in.
Do you gear, perhaps, with a thought to casting this or that particular singer?
Certainly, as you choose a show, you have to have people in mind that you know that could fill the roles or that it's certainly castable. Or if you're doing a show, for example, of the folk show, knowing that there are people out there that are really good guitar players or require specific skills.
Yeah, of course, when you do your Patsy Cline show, that's pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, it is.
Patsy Cline singing like Patsy Cline.
Right, exactly.
You wouldn't work with the arrangements in something like that. But there are probably some shows where you would like to change the arrangements around.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of doing the shows that we license through the ASCAP, is that they can be designed to fit the needs of our cast, whatever that cast is, the ranges and the arrangements that I choose for that particular show.
Yeah, sometimes people aren't aware of that, so I'm just briefly going to touch on that. ASCAP, you have to pay them to use their music.
You do, and you have to. We do a quarterly report to ASCAP every quarter, explaining, giving them a report of what we do, and we are charged and are allowed then to use the music that's licensed by either ASCAP or BMI. And we have what they call a blanket concert license.
Ah, well, is that good? I would assume that would be
good. Oh, yes. When I started doing these, I called to say, here's what we're doing, and how do I license these? And they were very friendly and worked with us and set us up an account with BMI and ASCAP, and then we work with them cooperatively on our reviews.
Yeah, there's more that goes into that, folks, than you would imagine, especially if you're doing works like this. Is there a year limit? I mean, if you're doing shows from the 40s.
Oh, they're happy to take our money.
Well, how old does something have to be?
And I'm not exactly sure on the year, but there are certain songs that become public domain that there are not charges on.
Yeah. A lot goes into something.
It does, and a lot of research, and you have to stay up on all those things.
Sure.
Yes,
sure. Yeah, I assume at certain times you have auditions.
Oh, yes. We have spring auditions every year, and a lot of people come to those. We meet a new budding star usually every year.
Budding star.
Yeah.
Do you expect certain levels for them? Do they have to excel at singing your particular kind of music?
Well, when they come, I ask them to either sing a musical theater piece or a standard, because that's what would be expected of them at the Chestnut. Mm-hmm. And then they also perform a one-minute monologue to see if they have acting skills and can connect with their material.
Well, sure. You have an intimate space.
Very intimate. We just seat 102 people.
How close do the performers get to the audience?
I tell the people that sit in the front row on the telephone that if you reach your hand out, you will be able to touch the stage.
Right?
It's a very close, intimate theater.
Is that daunting for some performers?
Well, I think the first time you perform at the Chestnut, when you realize how close the front row is, it's like, oh my, that's certainly the definition of intimate.
Does that work better, though, for your particular audience?
Well, I think that they enjoy it. It's very easily accessible, and that's part of the reason for our success. It's very easy to get into the Chestnut. There are not steps. We do have tiered seating in the back few rows, but it's the parking is accessible. It's easy to get in the door. There are no steps going in or to your chairs, and it's easy to deal with wheelchairs and walkers because our seats are movable.
Uh-huh.
So if we would have four wheelchairs one night, we can accommodate that. We don't just have, just space for one or two. And many of our patrons have walkers, and
we welcome all.
Yeah, and you're, it sounds like you're prepared for them.
Yes.
The show is called The Golden Age of Musicals, some of the greatest era in the history of Broadway theater. Shows will be featured such as 42nd Street, My Fair Lady, Brigadoon, Camelot, Fiddler on the Roof, Guys and Dolls, Music Man. What am I leaving out?
Let's see, the first act, Brigadoon, My Fair Lady, Camelot, and in the second act is Music Man, Fiddler on the Roof, and Guys and Dolls.
It has a nice long run, but his tickets are often in demand, so you might want to inquire about things already if that's what you would like to do. The address of the Chestnut Fine Arts Center is 234 North Chestnut Street. I'll bet that's why he named it Chestnut.
Wow, right on the Chestnut. That's right.
In Olathe, Kansas. And if you have questions, you need the zip code 66061. The website, chestnutfinearts.com, and the phone number, 913-764-2121, to catch the Golden Age of Musicals. And they will guide you through that golden age.
That's right.
Thanks so much for being here, Brad.
Thank you.
Brad's always very informative, and he does shows that are right up the alley of some of the more mature audience members in the show, something that they may not see at other places. And you kind of fill that niche, so to speak.
We're glad to.
Thanks so much for being with us. Brad Zimmerman, again, chestnutfinearts.com, 913-764-2121. Thanks so much for being with us and telling us what's going on and what's your plans for the future. I always enjoy hearing about all of those things. The Chestnut is down in Olathe. It's off of... I guess you could get off I-35.
At Santa Fe.
Santa Fe and go...
A mile and a half to the west, turn right at Chestnut, and you're right there.
Sounds pretty easy.
It is.
Sounds pretty easy. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
The Jazz Geek is next. He's sitting in for the Insider, but nothing changes. Still great jazz. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. We'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.